Chapter 25, Into the Lion's Den. I entered the room called the Lion's Den. It was large, dark, and cavernous, with a high ceiling. Heat and firelight emanated from a grand fireplace, occupying most of the far wall. There didn't appear to be anyone else in the room. No Hugh Blackwell. I made my way over to the fire. There were two wing-back chairs set before it, both of them empty. Nobody around. Blackwell must still be phoning. An actual working fireplace in Midtown Manhattan was a rarity, if not an illegality. This one was almost an absurdity. Its hearth was so big, you could almost walk around the fire standing up. Two lion-shaped andirons supported twin logs the size of baby sequoias. Beneath them was a mounded bank of red coals that sent tongues of yellow and blue flames rolling up their sides. It was mesmerizing to watch. After a few minutes warming my hands, I turned around to toast my backside. Freestanding display cases on thin, tapered legs were scattered around the room, reflecting back mirroring images of the flickering logs in the glass panes of each one. Curiosity won out over creature comfort, and I wandered away to inspect them, finding, among other things, Lou Gehrig's baseball mitt, Sid Luckman's muddy football cleats, sheet music by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein, a treatise by Trappist monk Thomas Merton, sample manuscript pages by Joyce Kilmer, Jack Kerouac, Paul Robeson, opera lyrics by Lorenzo Del Ponte, who, according to the caption I could barely make out in the dim, flickering light, was Mozart's chief librettist. He attended the college soon after it opened in 1754. I didn't get to see more, for suddenly I felt the hackles on the back of my neck rise. From an alcove space behind a row of display cases, I spied a pair of eyes glinting back at me. It appeared to be a male African lion standing stock still. No cage surrounding it, so presumably it was stuffed, although the flickering firelight, reflecting off what I hoped were its glass eyes, lent animation to its features that gave my rational left brain quite a run for its money. It seemed so utterly alive. I advanced a step or two closer and must have tripped an electronic eye because recessed overhead lights suddenly sprang up, and I could tell for sure that the animal was not among the living. In fact, it looked like it had been a long, long time since this one had been out stalking gazelles on the African veld. I heard a quiet door click and turned to see Blackwell make a stealthy entrance from behind a hanging wall tapestry.
Parker! Sorry to keep you waiting. Let's sit over by the fire, shall we?
Moving to the mantelpiece, he touched a hidden button, causing a wooden panel to slide open, revealing a dumbwaiter. On a silver tray inside were two snifters of brandy and two cigars. I smiled at the hidden button. Pretty neat trick, I said. Are there revolving bookcases around here, too? He paused to think about it.
No, I don't think so. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. We do have a library upstairs. Maybe there are.
Leaving the tray where it was, he tucked the two cigars in his breast pocket and brought the two brandies over, motioning me to a wing chair.
No thanks, really. I'm on probation.
Oh, come on. Who's going to report you? Besides, the way it's coming down out there, we're probably snowed in here till April. You have the perfect excuse. It's either drink this to keep warm or freeze to death.
He offered me the glass again.
Come on.
I accepted it. He handed me a cigar. I accepted that as well. Blackwell set his glass down on the table between us and drew a wax taper from a purple velvet box on the mantel. He bit the tip off his cigar and spat it into the fire. He touched the end of the taper to the bank of coals until it caught, then brought the flame up until it was about an inch from the cigar. He then worked his cheeks like a bellows, taking several strong pulls and releasing a puff of smoke with each one, like smoke signals. Once he had his going, he swung the flame to me. I bit off the end of mine in similar fashion and spat it like a watermelon seed, and then accepted his light, puffing as he had done. Once I had got mine going sufficiently, Blackwell tossed the taper onto the upper log, where it quickly went limp and then flamed up. He settled back in his chair, inhaling a deep drag, and then, tilting his head back, blew a fast-moving column of blue smoke upward toward the ceiling, where it filled the cockpit of an upside-down racing shell suspended above our heads. There was an inverted dog sled up there, too.
Listen, I forgot to tell you. I've reinstated your scholarship.
You did? Thank you.
You'll be receiving a refund for what you've already laid out.
Gosh, thank you.
Well, you deserve it.
The old lion picked up his snifter and took a sip. He then set it back down. Blackwell said,
Parker, it must be clear to you by now that I've taken an active interest in you.
Yes, and I appreciate that.
Then why the reticence? Why so reluctant?
I don't know. I couldn't think of a good answer. I didn't want to bring up my encounter with the radical alumnus in the restroom, so I remained silent. Blackwell said,
Well, you shouldn't think it's just me who's interested in you. There are others, too. Years ago, a group of us got together. This was during the 60s, because we were angry with the administration's policy of not revoking financial aid to the students who were bent on destroying this university. So we began targeting our giving, and it is a practice we have continued ever since. Out of each class that comes through, we select a few deserving students whom we feel are promising and whose careers we want to shepherd. The entire group votes. It's their decision, not just mine, and the vote for you was unanimous.
I said, The group thinks I'm deserving? Does the group know why I'm on probation?
Blackwell broke into an appreciative chuckle.
Yes, for playing hooky an entire semester without getting caught.
Half a semester.
Without getting caught.
Almost without getting caught.
There wasn't a one of us who didn't have a belly laugh over that and wished we'd had the nerve to do something that outrageous when we were in college.
You see, Parker, it shows pluck. That shows initiative. That's the kind of potential we are always seeking.